Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you think long term, when you understand your personal ambition, like you mentioned, you act faster than people who think short term. And the reason this is counterintuitive is short term thinkers who try and capitalize on trends. You know, they're out there moving quickly, you know, grabbing domain names or you know, acting quick with you know, fast manufacturing, fast fashion, all these different fields that you can really see people acting quickly and building businesses overnight almost, and making millions. But without the long-term thinking, the next wave, the next wind, the next you know, storm sends people scattering in every direction. And what we found is with people like Yvon Chouinard, who wrote The Forward, building a brand like Patagonia, he's able to act very quickly because he knows where he's going long-term. He doesn't have to make every calculation along the way. And this is a quality that unites all of these different brands, is they have a long-term ambition, some personal dream or aspiration, whether it's winning a hockey championship or building a better guitar, that they're seeking to follow and share with others.
How you dare? Talking to Lucas Conley today, and today is one of my favorite episodes because it is about what I love to talk about the most: legacy building, making sure that you're ensuring that the right culture is in place. And Lucas co-wrote a book which I believe answers a lot of the questions to how can you build a sustainable brand that also galvanizes and brings people from all backgrounds together. We talk about building brands with influence, how you set up your legacy, and how to do that in today's modern world. He has examples from several industries, and he, as long as his co-authors, interviewed some of the most preeminent leaders in today's world, and they dove into really what it takes to build a sustainable brand across personal lines as well as corporate lines. I really hope it's something you can apply. Learn how you can make your legacy personal, learn how you can contribute with impact, and how you can make the world a better place. Check it out, share it with everybody, and please, when you listen to the episode, at me and Lucas Conley so that you can let us know that you listened to the episode. Love you all, and enjoy the episode. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of As Told by Nomads, and today's guest is Lucas Conley, who is the co-author of Legacy in the Making. He's a writer with the Legacy Lab, which is a consulting lab that we're going to discuss very soon. He's also the author of various other books, and he's had a varied, varied, varied career. But a lot of praise has been coming in for this book of his, which is one of my favorite books of the year. And you all listen, know I've been reading a lot this year. I'm on 50-something on one of my 40 years. So this was one of the books that made the list. And some of the praise that you can hear is that Legacy in the Making is a masterful, comprehensive, thoughtful book that will steward you to achieve relevant, prosperous, and enduring brand strength. If you care about the impact of your brand stewardship, there is no better book from you. And that's from Joseph Mitchell, who's got a PhD and is a New York Times number one bestseller himself. So welcome to the show, Lucas.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, you wrote a book on legacy, but you are setting a legacy yourself. I mean, the praise here has been nothing short of remarkable. Must read, inspirational, educational, different type of books. And I'm so curious about that. As someone who is one of the co-authors of such a book, where did that come from? You know, you grew up in multiple cities, but I'm curious, when you were a kid, young Lucas, did you see yourself doing what you're doing right now today?
I definitely understood very early on that I loved writing, and that it was something that I connected with personally, and then allowed me to connect with others. And that people identified that I had a skill in it. And so that was something that I can say at a very young age was clear to me. It wasn't clear until after college, when I started getting paid to write, that this was going to be a career for me. I think for a long time, I kind of assumed that I'd find some other way to get paid. But once I became a journalist, I started my career just after college at the Atlantic Monthly, and started writing for the Boston Globe, began building my career into business journalism and sports, writing for Fast Company and ESPN. And all of these were just great opportunities at the time. You know, I loved writing. I never pictured myself writing for business or sports, but when somebody would approach me and say, "Hey, would you like to write a story about this figure or this business?" The common thread was always, "I love to write. I love to tell stories, even if it's about a subject that I wasn't, you know, intuitively that appealed to me." I jumped, and before long, I was working for Fast Company as a staff writer, and I wrote an essay that I guess it was the early days of the internet, but it went viral. And I got my first book deal for a book called Obsessive Branding Disorder. Hmm. And that was a social critique of the way that marketing had kind of infiltrated our culture.
Wow. Wow. Okay, so there are a few things I want to peel out of there, because the people listen to the show who would say that they're looking for their passion. They're trying to identify their passion. You identified your passion early on as writing. And what you did with writing is so interesting to me, because Fast Company, ESPN, Boston Globe, Spin, Wall Street Journal, these are all very, very different different publications. But the one connecting thread there is your writing, and also possibly your eye for stories, your ability to figure out how stories can impact people on a personal level. And that skill that you have that's transferable, it's something that I like to get into the mind of experts of, because mm-hmm. I hear a lot of times, a lot of people are saying, "I don't know how my skill set can translate into all that. I have this passion, but it doesn't work." You're someone that has managed to turn that, myth around and say, "Hey, look, you have a skill. It can be anything you want in any industry." So can you break it down for everyone here, how you were able to make it transferable?
Yeah. And actually, that's a really good segue. I can talk about it in the context of the current book, because the characters that we started focusing on for this book, Legacy in the Making, had a characteristic that I had, which is early on in my life, it was not about making $1 million. I think if you talk to people about what they want to do, what their passion is, you will find some that say, "I want to get rich." And then this book is not necessarily targeted towards starting that way. This book kind of frames the way to think about building your career with thinking about your ambition. So, for example, the first story we talk about in the book, the title is Contribution Before Extraction. And I think that is a great way to answer your question, which is when you think about your passion and you think about how you can contribute that passion to others, whatever it may be, whatever field you're in, when you lead with contribution, what we found again and again and again with the people that we profiled and that we were researching is that they found ways to get paid. They found ways to actually build businesses, to build influence, to expand their reach, because people saw how fired up they were and they saw the contributions that they were making to the world. So what we tried to do is ultimately highlight people who've made great profits and made a great contribution, because it shows this virtuous cycle that follows when you follow your passion.
Yeah, and that's, I love how you segue that into, I mean, you can tell that you're in the media with the way you did that. That's a seamless thing. That's a very skill set, strong skill set with storytelling. But let's even dive into that more. So you have, I believe, 7 pillars?
5. We have 5 in this
book. Oh, sorry. 5 pillars. And you started off with the Ford, which is what arrested me the first time. And I mean arrest in a good way. But when I was reading I'm going to butcher his name, but Yvonne of Patagonia was saying about how he rebranded his company and had a whole culture change. It really, you know, it shook me, because, like I said, to you before the show, my job a lot of times as a consultant and speaker is to go into a lot of these companies that are figuring out how to change an organizational culture and attract people from different diverse talent and create inclusive environments. And it starts with whatever the internal culture is. And his ability to recognize that and to start from there and to say, I need to contribute, I need to make sure that there's this synergy with what I'm saying and what the company believes and what our values, was just refreshing to see. And then you go on to the people that you actually highlighted and organizations you highlighted. I'm just curious if you could just give the audience go beyond the first pillar and go through every step and educate us on why that is the best way to build a legacy in today's modern world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And of course, if you look at our book, it has seven key parts. So I can.
That's why I saw the seven. Yes. Yeah.
So, but the four was a good example with Yvon Chouinard. He was a guy that we sat down with up in Ventura, California. And he's one of the types of people who really exhibits all five of these transformations that we talk about in the book through a lifetime of work. He's stepped back from the day-to-day management of Patagonia now, and he's built this incredible brand, and a lot of times he's built it through hardship. But he, in the foreword, kind of walks through what we ultimately saw was going to be a good mirror of the transformations in the book. And so we talked to him, and when we were working and editing the foreword, and really he was able to hit those five points. So the foreword's a great place to get a sense of what the book's about and the five transformations. And I can kind of walk through those. The five transformations in the book center around this idea that there's a traditional way of building legacy and there's a modern way of building legacy. So when you look at the traditional way that people thought about legacy in the past, they thought about things in kind of an institutional manner. So they might have followed organizational practices. They might have built their entire career around a very kind of formal set of business-like behaviors. Today, we're seeing people who are following personal ambitions in almost every field and really redefining what the role of their career is through their own personal aspirations, rather than trying to fit within an institutional organizational model. So everybody profiled in our book has that first characteristic, what we ultimately call the modern legacy mindset. That's that first principle. The second one we call from attitudinal to behavioral. So traditional business leaders, traditional brand leaders will think more about attitude than letting their actual beliefs guide their behaviors. When they're hiring, when they're building an organization, the culture of the organization, they'll kind of project an image rather than letting the truth shine through. So that's another transformation that we profile. The third transformation is commanding to influential. So traditionally, the command and control model of dealing with customers, you'd reach out and tell customers what you're doing and what to buy, and it was kind of a one-way communication model. That's completely changed in the digital era, the era of the internet, the era of social media. Now we're seeing leaders who build brands with influence. They ride cultural events. They're out there talking to people about what they care about. They're letting outsiders into their brand, which was never true before. So that's a transformation that really distinguishes traditional from modern legacy builders. The fourth, modern legacy builders are really unconventional. While traditional legacy is fairly orthodox, it stays within its category. People just try to be the best in the category. Modern legacy thinkers don't want to be the best. They want to be the only one doing what they do. This is a characteristic we saw in everybody in the book as well. And the fifth transformation is from episodic to perpetual. Episodic innovation, episodic evolution is a very classic characteristic of a traditional legacy. You'll see traditional legacy builders innovate only when they need to. They will continue doing what they did in the past or innovate all at once. What we found with modern legacy builders is that they perpetually innovate. They're drawing on their past, inspired by the future, and they're forging their modern legacy in the present. So those are the five key transformations that we noticed, and those combined to what we call the modern legacy mindset.
That's, I mean, it's fantastic. And anyone listening, you should all check out these stories. They all, these five pillars are told through the lens of, you know, several brands. I mean, you've got Grey Goose, you've got the Honest brand, I believe. And,
yep.
And you educated, and you put me on this hockey team here from Canada, yeah, who has like 13 championships, I believe, if I remember correctly. And yep, they just like, they went, they hadn't had a winning season in a while. And
yeah,
when I was reading the book, I was like, okay, this guy came here, but let me go on the internet and check their record to see if they actually make the playoffs. And they did. They got out the first round, but yep, it was so fascinating how this translates across several industries. And Mark were really smart to show that it wasn't just like it's an alcoholic beverage or a sports team or any of that. It's really something that's transferable. And I want to really just say that personal thing, I think, is the biggest point. The idea of making it personal. And it's something that a lot of people, a lot of traditions have veered away from. Why do you feel like that's the case?
Well, and I wanted to add one more thing to that, too. I think one of the other qualities that unites all these stories throughout all these industries, right? You mentioned we have sports, we have music, we've got auto manufacturing,
yeah,
in there.
You got red, yeah.
Right. We've got nonprofits. This counterintuitive insight that Mark and I started to recognize as we spoke to these people, which is when you think long term, when you understand your personal ambition, like you mentioned, you act faster than people who think short term. And the reason this is counterintuitive is short term thinkers who try and capitalize on trends, you know, that they're out there moving quickly, you know, grabbing domain names or you know, acting quick with fast manufacturing, fast fashion, all these different fields that you can really see people acting quickly and building businesses overnight almost and making millions. But without the long term thinking, the next wave, the next wind, the next storm sends people scattering in every direction. And what we found is with people like Yvon Chouinard, who wrote the foreword, building a brand like Patagonia, he's able to act very quickly because he knows where he's going long term. He doesn't have to make every calculation along the way. And this is a quality that unites all of these different brands, is they have a long term ambition, some personal dream or aspiration, whether it's winning a hockey championship or building a better guitar, that they're seeking to follow and share with others. And because they have that, as market trends and consumer trends come and go, they're not getting lost in their goals.
Yeah. And for those listening, the five pillars are: take leadership personally, behave your beliefs, let outsiders in, invent your own game, never stop making legacy.
Yes, now, thank you.
No. I always find reiteration to be very helpful to the listeners. Now, let's talk about, some people, I find that some people go up to the behavior beliefs part, and then the outsiders is where they feel a little afraid. And then those that get the outsiders in, they don't know how to invent their own game after the outsiders are in. And it's such an interesting mix for me, at least for me, to see just as a consultant and a strategist, which you are as well. Usually in this stage, when you let outsiders in, people get nervous about the culture changing. And I find that if you have a firm culture, it's the other way around, where the culture wouldn't change. Everybody would be enriched, because of the outsiders you're bringing in, because they're attracted to that.
Yeah.
But a lot of fast growing, I'm bringing Uber up, for example. Uber is the example I'm bringing here. Fast growing companies, mm-hmm, billions of dollars in revenue, but they, that stage, the outsiders in, and inventing their own game. In between that stage, a lot of times they miss the boat there. So, mm-hmm, can you talk to us about what you've learned? I mean, you've got the Legacy Lab, so I imagine you had a lot of test cases and case studies for this.
Yeah. The story that most fits what you're talking about in the book is The Honest Company, actually. The type of that story is your culture is your product. And I think what they do on an internal level as they've grown, and they've got Ivy Leaguers lined up to work for potentially less than they could get at competitors' companies because of their values, because of their mission, because of what they do in the world. That company, and this actually is true of many of the brands that we speak with, they regard the products that they make as kind of secondary to their values and their culture. So, for example, they make a lot of cleaning products, a lot of home and baby products, but their mission is a cleaner world, cleaner, greener world, I think is one of their values. Mm-hmm. So if they end up making clothing next year or homewares or, you know, electronics, that all fits under a greater mission and a greater culture for their brand. So the people who work there for that mission, not because they love making diapers or you know, moisturizer. And like I said, this is true at a lot of the different brands we see where the people are there because they really follow this ethos. So I think when you have that strong set of values that draws the people to your brand, that can be what guides the brand and is hard to dilute. Even if the products change, even if the people change, even if the company grows, we found that culture is when done right, one of the easiest things to scale, right? You can really grow that you know, from 100 people to 1,000 people with those values if those values are held strong. So in the book, we talk about The Honest Company.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Because they've done a really, really good job of reinforcing those values even as they've grown. So you know they're regularly scheduling programs where they're talking to their employees about their values and how they're coming to life. Which is, of course, different than just, you know, publishing a book of values and putting it in an HR, you know, handbook on the shelf. It's really keeping those values and those beliefs alive as the employees evolve, as the products evolve, as the company grows.
When you talk about short-term thinking and how that perpetuates our mindsets today and we forget about the long-term view, I'm always reminded of my favorite leader of all time. Everybody in the podcast, regular podcast listeners know this. I always bring up Nelson Mandela. But he had such a big impact in my life because when you look at his life, after 27 years in jail, he had the option of saying, I'm going to retaliate. It's my turn. You know, you guys put me here in jail. Now you all are going to experience the wrath that I experienced. But what was most powerful to me was how he felt like reconciliation and forgiveness was the better tool for the nation to survive. He said, you know, we're all South Africans, white, you know, black people of color. And if we don't put aside our differences and understand how to work well together, we won't be able to have a united South Africa. And I've always been fascinated by that type of thinking. And it sounds like that is what permeates your book, where the leaders that are able to recognize that and understand that sense of big picture thinking is so much more important than whatever, you know, can give you short-term pleasure. And it's the same thing in sports. You know, you were for ESPN, whether, you know, you have to sacrifice those moments in the gym and you know that you're putting in these hours, even though you could go out at night to do something like that. It's the same sort of behavior. And these are old stories that we've seen, but you tell it in such a new way. And I just wonder where we lost that.
It's interesting, right? Because there is, I think our culture moves so fast. It's one of the things we talk about a lot in the front of the book is you know, how did we get here to this place that people are behaving this way? What people call short-termism. And I think that part of the reason is you know, we consume a lot of media. We have a 24-hour news cycle. We have the internet and social media now kind of feeding this faster and faster sense of the way we spread information, which in many ways is good, but it also comes with it this sense that other things that need to happen quickly, and this instant gratification comes along with it, this desire for overnight success.
Yeah.
And people lose sight of their longer term goals. And I think Nelson Mandela is a great example, because had he, say, gone about a campaign of retribution, where does that leave the country? Where does that leave the people, right? When you think long term about what that would have done, you start to see that that's not actually what he wanted to build. Similarly, you know, we have a lot of these leaders in this book that they're thinking long term about not just the company that they built, or even their influence on culture now, but they're thinking in terms of how do my values transcend generations?
Yes.
You know, how does what I've built, when I'm gone, when I die or when I retire and I have to hand this brand on, what am I doing that can be carried on by others? Not exactly the way I do it, but with the core mission or values that will carry forward in their own way for the next generation. And one of the stories we point to is Taylor Guitars at the end of the book. The guys who founded this brand, Bob Taylor and Kurt Listig, they actually didn't want to sell this brand to another company and make a ton of money as they retired, because they thought, we've seen this happen with other guitar brands where somebody will come in and they don't have the same connection to the brand, and they'll just repeat the same products or really kind of try and squeeze the last dollar out of it with the right accounting and financing practices. But they're not really building the brand the way the founders built the brand. So what they decided to do before they retired is to identify their successor. And this is a guy from their guitar shop. He's a master luthier, builds guitars in his mid-30s. And they said, they basically identified this guy and said, you will carry this brand forward because you embody these values. And I think that is something that great leaders do as they look forward, is they look at what, not just how can I build this or how can I influence culture, but how can I influence others to carry forward what I believe in?
Yeah, no, I love it. I mean, I can't sing the praises of this book enough. And what you said is so true. I also marked down something in line with what you said. I folded the book a lot, so I hope you don't mind.
It's got all this design in there.
I know. There's just so much good stuff. Lucas, you got to stop writing this well. But the thing that I focused on here on was, I believe it was when we were talking about the hockey team. And it says, Toronto Maple Leafs. There was a list of things that were put there to keep in mind. Be clear and honest about your vision. That was the first thing. Be self-assured throughout the good times and the bad times. Make sure everyone is on board. Hire the very best. Strip away complexity, rather. Put the team before the star. Invest in the future. Respect the past and lead with pride. Now, that was to his team, but I find that that's also relevant to us. I wanted to get your perspective on individuals now. I know this was told through a lot of company brands, but what has happened with the digital age is that you have influencers now, right? And influencers, I'm 28. My youngest brother is 19, and his heroes are YouTube stars. So these are people that are putting on boxing matches that are, you know, that are not even boxers, but they're going to pull the same type of ratings. And these are people that get the news and stuff like that. I am very, very eager to hear your thoughts on how to apply that on an individual level for those who have skill sets. Maybe they're writers like yourself, podcasters, or other forms of aspiring thought leaders. What are things that they can focus on?
Well, it's great that the example you used was the Toronto Maple Leafs, because that whole chapter, the fifth chapter, is about the perpetual side of legacy building. And this is, I think, probably the hardest part of this, right? A lot of us can dream, a lot of us can inspire others and engage others and even be unique. You know, those are the first four pillars of this book. But the idea of keeping it up and keeping after it is where a lot of people fall short. And I think this is where it ties back well into the first chapter. If you're dedicated to something that you truly love and that you truly want to see change in the world, you make what we call a durable difference in the world, that's going to be the quality that helps you get up every day and keep after it even when you have bad days. The Toronto Maple Leafs, what we loved about them is that they put their plan into practice all the time, so that it's not just, you know, we fell short today, so something must be wrong. It's, yeah, we fell short today. That's part of the plan. We plan to lose. We plan to get our butts kicked in the name of getting better. And if we stick to these core ideas day in, day out, through our practices, build these habits, and follow these values, we can get where we want to go in the long term. And they have a years-long vision. This isn't, you know, a one-year, one-season team. They could have, you know, bought great players and tried to go for a championship in 1 year, but they decided to go for younger players and build around core values and core beliefs for the long term. That quality, I think, is hard if you don't really have that long-term personal ambition set in. So it really does tie back to that first chapter.
Yeah. And it all comes down to self-awareness initially, I think. Even with, on a personal level, it's really knowing who you are, what you want to achieve. I think a lot of times people find themselves comparing themselves or their company's brand to other people, and they miss out on the core ingredients of what makes them who they are initially. And that's a very dangerous thing, because when you're talking about, you know, in one of your five pillars, you talk about, you know, sort of having your own flavor. When it comes to that part, you don't even know who you are at that point, because you based it off of someone else's, you know, identity. And so that's just another reason why I love the book. And I know I keep saying this, but because it all ties into one another. Each of these five pillars, they tie into one another in the sense that you can't just do four out of the five or right. three out of the five or, you know, or one out of the five. You have to do each of these things, because if you don't do particularly the last point, which you just talked about, it's not going to last. You know, and that's what your whole point throughout this book is: long term. That's so fascinating with me. I also want to talk about legacy as it pertains to media. You are someone who has worked in traditional media. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've heard every sort of death pronouncement to your medium. Sports media's dead. Media's dead. It's digital. Cord cutters. You know, every of these things, you know, people are emerging. What is the point of being a writer? And these things have plagued, particularly the media industry in the last 10 years, I would say. Mm-hmm. Where do you see the world going in media? How do you see my generation and younger consuming media, and how do you see professionals staying relevant so that they can be, I guess, they can be paid what they're worth?
It's a great question, right? Because if you get caught following the trends, and this is true in a metaphorical way, right, for any business, but in speaking with about media, if you get caught following the trends, you see these different types of medias are dying or evolving. I came into the magazine industry. The magazine industry has taken a terrible hit, but it's evolved into kind of an online thing. Nowadays, when somebody says they're in a magazine, I almost just assume they're talking about an online version versus the physical version. Mm-hmm. So you see these things evolve quickly if you follow the trends. But if you step back and you're trying to build a career in media, for example, or you're trying just to anticipate where media is going, I think what's borne out for me in the field for a couple decades now is that people who tell great stories always find a medium for those stories. It may be now in video, or it may be in social media. I mean, the stories that people are able to share on, even on Instagram and short videos, just blow me away sometimes. And it stimulates the creativity of storytelling. So if you go back to that core idea of what am I here to do, and you're working in media, or you're trying to share your message via media, I would say it's not to get caught in the trend. For example, I want to tell my story for Instagram. It's, you know, what is my story? You know, what is the career I'm trying to build first, with regardless, because 5 years from now, all the media we currently use might be obsolete, and we might be looking at these, you know, very, very different forms of technology that are helping us tell stories. But the core idea, telling story, sharing inspiration, sharing how other people solve problems or inspiring people to think up new ways to solve their own problems, that kind of backbone, I think, will always be present in media, whatever technology we're using.
Yeah. I think it's always interesting hearing you talk and watching both of you. I'm just, I, you know, when I read your book, I looked at both of your careers. The thing that has always been interesting is that you've been able to tell stories, whether it's with your Legacy Lab, and you understand that storytelling is a tale as old as time, to steal from my favorite Disney movie. But Beauty and the Beast, shout out. But it is something that it was done by people prehistorically, you know, whether it's cavemen or any of that. That's how legacies were passed. That's how lessons were taught. That's how religions were spread, stories, mm-hmm. fables, and different things like that. And that has only just, the only difference with that time and today's time is the vehicle and the platforms at which they're shared. And what stories do today is that they allow people to see themselves in some of the heroes, allow people to understand cautionary tales, but also allow people to be inspired and motivated. And if you're able to tell your company or your brand story in a way that allows them to put themselves into that, ultimately you're creating a legacy of people that will champion your brand, which is what sustains it.
It's interesting too, that what you reminded for me was when I started with this project, with the Legacy Lab, Mark founded this in 2012 and I came on shortly after. What I noticed coming out of journalism, because that's really why he hired me, is to work alongside with the journalistic eye for the research that he was doing into legacy, was I started to identify certain people who were sharing their story in ways that were never being told in classic journalism stories. And what I mean is not necessarily that you can't find stories about legacy in the media. What I mean is when you just ask people about legacy year after year after year, what you start to see are themes like people sharing stories they've never shared before in their personal lives. Yvon Chouinard, is a very experienced business leader. He's built Patagonia into this global billion-dollar brand. But at the end of our interview, he said, "Hey, you know what? Would you get me the transcript for this interview? Because I've said a lot of things that I've never talked about before." And that's the type of thing we hear pretty regularly when you ask people about their legacy. And I think that there's something very deeply universal about that, whether you're building a brand or you're just working to start your career, that when you think about yourself or your work in terms of the long-term impact it's going to make, you really start to get to a deeper, more meaningful, purposeful place that is both personally inspiring and inspires others.
Yeah, that's why it's always important to be clear about your vision from the start. And oftentimes we need to listen to ourselves. And sometimes we're so focused on the end destination that we just miss out on simple clues that are in front of us. What our friends say we have a knack for, where environments we always find ourselves in, or shortcuts we happen to make. I think you brought up a great point where you said, if we continue to live in this sort of short-term type of world, we're going to miss out on just that those firm foundational skill sets that we already have. And I think your book is a great reminder of that. We're talking to one of the co-authors of Legacy in the Making, Building a Long-Term Brand to Stand Out in a Short-Term World. And getting ready to close, but I just want to give you the floor to talk more about what Legacy Lab is and what why you joined it more. I know you touched on it there when you said you were invited to do a lot of the work there, but what is the hope for Legacy Lab?
Yeah, one of the things that we're looking to do always is identify the next modern legacy builders. So we're always looking for people telling new stories, people building new brands with these types of values in mind. As Mark and I like to say, we're always writing the second book, because we are out there on the road speaking and talking, identifying what we call new legacy makers. We have an award series coming up right now for people who are as young as 11 years old, but who have these visionary ambitions to change the world for the better. So that's kind of our next chapter. We have a nonprofit foundation that we've started that's part of the Legacy Lab. A portion of the sales of every book goes towards these new legacy makers. And we're also looking for people who have established brands who are looking to make that turn. People who have a legacy or have come into a brand with a legacy that are looking to grow that legacy, evolve that legacy, and bring it into the modern age and evolve it moving forward. So we're keeping our eye for, you know, to the future with respect to the past, regardless of who we work with. But it's a fascinating tension between those two, whether you're talking to someone who's very young or who's leading a brand that's over 150 years old.
Wow. Huh. And what's the website?
That's thelegacylab.com. And we're also The Legacy Lab on Twitter. And we have a Facebook as well.
Okay. Now, I'll definitely make sure I put that in the show notes. And where can people find your book?
We were available on Amazon anywhere, of course, and in your local bookstore.
Wow. Okay. This is great. Legacy in the Making. Make sure you get it. Make sure you grab a copy. You're not going to regret it. And I'll put that in the show notes. But it's been a real pleasure talking to you. And before I leave, I want to ask you my final question, which is the mission statement, my vision, if you will. And it's the foundation of everything that I do, podcast, speaking, and consulting. And it's this: use your difference to make a difference. That's what I always say. And that's the foundation of anything that I do. So how do you, Lucas, use your difference to make a difference?
I use my difference to make a difference by telling stories about the human side of business. That's a quality that I started to recognize in myself probably 10, 15 years ago, that there are a lot of business stories that really stick to the numbers or stick to the quarterly trends and what we would call the institutional organizational thinking. And I was fortunate to rise up as a journalist through Fast Company, which really is a business magazine that tries to tell more personal stories. And I've leaned into that aspect of my career since then and really tried to look for the people behind those businesses and the personal stories behind those people. So that's how I use my difference.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Well, Lucas Connolly, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you, Tyler. That was great.
Pleasure is mine. Till next time, fellows and ladies, use your difference to make a difference.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to reach out to Tayo and to use your difference to make a difference, head over to www.tayoroxon.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.